First, we're taking a look at the week in national politics. President Trump is calling for a major infrastructure plan to be part of a future coronavirus relief package, saying that Congress should go big and bold. He's also extending the government's social distancing recommendations until April 30th. And in a press conference last week, Trump criticized Democratic governors, some of them for not showing appreciation for receiving federal assistance. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of how the president has responded to the COVID-19 pandemic? What do you want to see him and members of Congress push for in the next stimulus package? Is now a good time to lock down an infrastructure plan? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Seungmin Kim is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. Seungmin, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with something you've been reporting on, the suggestion from the president on Twitter for an infrastructure plan, a big one, to be part of a future stimulus package. He said $2 trillion. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she's hoping for $760 million for infrastructure over 5 years. What's going on there?
So Infrastructure Week actually has been kind of a running joke in Washington
right.
for some time now. Whenever something kind of goes awry with the Trump administration, we always kind of joke that it's Infrastructure Week. But there could actually be discussion this time while the administration and Capitol Hill really scramble to find ways to stimulate the economy beyond that $2.2 trillion package that we saw signed into law last week. The president always hasn't really had these deficit concerns. So he puts out a big number, $2 trillion. And this is something that he told privately to allies that he wants to do at some point. Nancy Pelosi obviously wants to put her own stamp on the legislation by proposing a Democratic kind of starting point, starting line in terms of what they want to see in their infrastructure proposal. But it's really important to remember that we're in the very, very early stages here. And you're going to need sign off from congressional Republicans, particularly Senate Republicans, which controls that chamber. And if you listen to the words of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he is taking a very kind of wait and see approach on what we would call a phase four of a coronavirus package in Congress. He wants to let this massive $2.2 trillion package work and see and kind of go from there and assess and gauge the impact before deciding to do anything else.
Right. And the impact of that is, you know, it hasn't even really started to trickle out that money yet, right, from the phase three?
Exactly. I mean, the benefit that the most Americans will probably see and the most kind of visual sign or emblem of this package are those checks totaling up to $1,200 per person that will go out if you meet a certain income threshold. But those checks aren't going to go out for at least a few weeks. So it's going to be some time. And, you know, today is April 1st. There are rents due, there are bills due, and there are mortgages due. So this really doesn't provide immediate relief. I mean, federal government is working as fast as they can, but those checks aren't going to go out right away. Some of the more complicated parts of this measure are also the expanded unemployment benefits. While that is something that is supported by both Democrats and Republicans, we have to remember each state has their own kind of unemployment benefits application system. So that's another complicated process. So while in Congress's terms, they moved actually relatively quickly in passing this package, it will be some time before we see the average American who qualifies for aid under this package can actually see those benefits in their hands and their pockets.
With the infrastructure idea, you report that some people have raised concerns. You know, right now we're trying to social distance and keep some people away from work. New infrastructure spending would theoretically bring groups of people together to do work. Is that a roadblock here?
I mean, a nice pun there with roadblock. I think that would be one concern. But remember, Congress is actually out and they won't be convening again at the earliest April 20th. And I think considering all the stay-at-home orders that we've been seeing, particularly here in the Washington area, April 12th could perhaps even be an ambitious date. So I think at that point, whenever Congress reconvenes, there will be some sort of we will have a little bit of better guidance as to whether these social distancing guidelines are relaxed a little bit or, you know, extended even further. But that is a concern. I mean, one thing that's been mentioned a lot recently is that there is so much of COVID-19 that we're still learning. We're learning how it transmits. We're learning that, you know, you don't necessarily have to be showing symptoms to have this virus. We're learning about how long this virus stays alive in the air and on surfaces. So I think, you know, if and when the Congress and the administration discuss, a phase four package, I think that's also something that they're going to have to think about.
Now, staying with phase three for a moment, you and some of your colleagues wrote up the kind of frantic efforts to hammer this thing out. As you mentioned, infrastructure we've been talking about for years, immigration we've been talking about for decades. But in this crisis here, Congress did a really big thing really fast. What stood out to you about some of the behind the scenes maneuvering?
I think you're exactly right. But the fact that Congress was able to move at such relative speed to get at this package so quickly. And I recall just at the start of these negotiations back in about mid-March, when senior administration officials started tossing around a $1 trillion figure, our eyes were popping at how massive that package was. But that number quickly ballooned to $2.2 trillion pretty quickly without, without Democrats or Republicans even really batting an eye here. And what stood out to me, too, was that there's always, even in a time of crisis, there always is going to be very much internal tension. Democrats were so angry at Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell because he kind of went, he did not want to negotiate with Speaker Nancy Pelosi. His view was that the House had kind of taken the lead on the previous packages, and it was really time for Senate Republicans to start the process here. There were a lot of tense moments. There were tense phone calls. And it was also striking to me, we're used to it by now, but sometimes a tweet from the president can really get in the way of these negotiations. We report on a scene where Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin were in Schumer's Capitol office late at night. They were about to, you know, put the handshake deal on, and then Trump tweeted some pretty harsh comments about Nancy Pelosi. So Senator Schumer dialed up the president and said, look, those tweets do not help. I think the negotiators largely kind of kept the president out of the process, kind of followed the guidelines of what he would sign, but didn't really let the day-to-day tweeting and the rhetoric from the president kind of dictate the negotiation. So I thought that was an interesting point as well.
Talking to Seungmin Kim from The Washington Post. It's our weekly roundup of the latest news in national politics. Well, that's the president and Congress. There's also been a combination of tension and cooperation between the White House and governors looking for federal help. Here's the president speaking late last week, talking about Vice President Mike Pence, the point person on coronavirus, Mike Pence's communication with state leaders.
He calls all the governors. I tell him, I mean, I'm a different type of person. I say, Mike, don't call the governor of Washington. You're wasting your time with him. Don't call the woman in Michigan. Well, it doesn't make any difference what happens.
Call the governor of Washington?
No, you know what I say? If they don't treat you right, I don't call. He's a different type of person. He'll call quietly anyway, okay?
So that's a unique message from a president in a time of crisis. Can you lay out some of the back and forth of the president and how he talks about and deals with governors?
Exactly. I think, first of all, governors know that even if they are the opposing party of the president or have tangled with President Trump in the past, they know that there does need to be some sort of federal state cooperation. So I think you saw at the outset, particularly from New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, trying to make nice with the president, kind of, kissing up to him on air, knowing that, again, he needs the federal assistance. But, you know, there is a patience limit for a lot of these politicians. And the president has really lashed out at a lot of these governors. I mean, one target that has one of its frequent targets during this pandemic has been Washington Governor Jay Inslee, where we know his home state was one of the first or the first that was really hard hit by this crisis. And early on in the process, he called Governor Inslee a snake. In a private call with governors, Governor Inslee pushed back and said, you know, he didn't perhaps call the president names, but said, you know, we can't have just backup from these states. We need a Tom Brady, you know, referring to the now, you know, the former Patriots, now Buccaneers quarterback, in terms of the kind of guidance and the leadership they need from the federal administration. That we've seen him clearly tangle with a Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer, who, interestingly, Michigan, clearly an important state for the president to keep in his column this November. And Governor Whitmer, someone who was talked about for the party's vice presidential nomination. So he really does. I mean, there has been a tendency for the president in past natural disasters under his presidency to lash out at city and state officials that have been hit hard by natural disasters. I'm thinking about Puerto Rico officials as one example. So this is kind of playing out, that kind of dynamic is playing out again, except on just such a broader scale.
We're talking about President Trump's response to the COVID-19 pandemic and other top stories in national politics with Sungmin Kim, White House reporter for The Washington Post. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think President Trump has done at addressing the pandemic? Do you worry about his rhetoric getting in the way of solutions? Do you see enough cooperation between states and the federal government? Do you want to see more efforts from the president and Congress when it comes to economic recovery, economic relief from the economic consequences of the coronavirus pandemic? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Sungmin Kim, White House reporter at The Washington Post, looking at some of the week's news from the nation's capital. Sungmin, as you said earlier, you know, Congress is out for a couple weeks now, at least. What are you watching for right now when it comes to federal responses to the coronavirus?
Well, first of all, I'm waiting to see whether all these pleas from particularly hospitals, medical professionals for just basic equipment are satisfied. We've heard so many stories about hospitals all over the nation being so short on these PPEs, these personal protective equipment, such as masks and just body coverings, so they can administer tests, so they can administer, they can care for the people who are sick. That is a question that, you know, my colleagues and I have repeatedly pressed upon the president and the members of his task force at these briefings about when exactly are all those materials going to come down to these hospitals that need them. Ventilators are obviously another huge necessity. And what is the president doing to ramp up production of these? And at the end of the day, what is so crucial to watch for us in Washington, and also to repeatedly ask the administration on, are testing. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where the president, you know, falsely said that if anyone who wants a test can get a test. We clearly see that that is not true. Even people who need a test, who may have some of the symptoms, these tests kits have to be prioritized. For example, people who are showing severe symptoms, or for symptomatic healthcare workers. The president, particularly, or the president's task force, particularly Vice President Mike Pence, if you watch these briefings, tout almost every day the rising number of tests that they are making available in the United States. And while that is true, there are more that are being made available. You know, state officials, people on the ground, hospitals say that is clearly not enough. We are not testing enough per capita as other countries such as South Korea. And that is something that I'm going to be watching, and something really critical for the American public to pay attention to in the coming weeks.
And that reminds me of a bit of ancient history, Sungmin, phase two of economic relief from Congress. I think that's the one, and it's been, what, 3 or 4 weeks or something now. That was the one that tried to aim funding for healthcare providers in particular, right? Is that money starting to translate into the stuff you were just talking about?
Healthcare providers, there were medical leave provisions that all that Congress focused on. And it's hard to see. I mean, you have heard some sort of positive responses, but it's, you know, when that money kind of gets tied up in the bureaucracy of the administration, I mean, it's hard to see right now how directly that money is benefiting these particular states. And also just remember, the demand is just so overwhelming for these hospitals, for these medical providers right now. So whether that, you know, injection of emergency spending, which is about $100 billion, that second tranche of spending, you know, how much of that has gone into effect is a good question. It's something that we're also watching.
Jacques Sungmin Kim from The Washington Post, looking at some of the big stories in national politics, pretty much all coronavirus related these days. Sungmin Kim, another story you're following is at the State Department now, and a lot of members of Congress are very curious about this. The fate of Americans currently abroad trying to get back here to the United States among lockdowns, difficulties traveling by air, of course. What's the story there?
So obviously, at any given moment, there are hundreds, tens of thousands of Americans traveling abroad, whether for vacation, for work. And a lot of these travel advisories kind of came at a rapid clip. You know, we first saw the president talks about how he shut down a lot of the travel by non-U.S. citizens from China earlier on in this pandemic crisis. We saw the ban from Europe, and now the State Department is warning anybody not to travel abroad at this time, putting it at a level 4 travel advisory, which is the highest level, and urging all Americans to come home. That obviously creates a lot of logistical troubles. You have airlines that have cut, you know, up to 90-some-odd% of their international flight capacities. A lot of Americans abroad are in remote places where it's just hard to, it just takes longer to get to an airport. And even when you get to that airport, trying to get a flight is limited. A lot of these Americans are appealing through their members of Congress, particularly senators, who are then, you know, appealing straight to the State Department. But in our reporting has shown that, you know, there have been some successes in getting, repatriating these Americans, making sure they're able to get home, chartering flights so that they are able to get back into the United States safely. There has been a lot of frustration from both Republicans and Democrats in the Senate about how expeditiously these Americans are being brought home. You know, we have, you know, Senator Mark Warner, the Democrat from Virginia. He told us last week, and I want to caution, this was last week, so the numbers can be updated by now. But as of late last week, more than 100 of his constituents were stuck in Algeria, Kenya, Saudi Arabia, India, Samoa, Ghana, the Philippines, and Peru. Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican from Florida, was really frustrated at the State Department. You know, he is a Republican. He is an ally of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. But he complained that mid-level officials at the State Department really failed to act quickly to try and repatriate some of Florida residents who were stuck in Peru. So this is a process that, again, the administration has recognized is ongoing and are trying to do that. I thought it was notable that the president said yesterday, he noted that more than 25,000 Americans from more than 50 countries have been brought home. But this is something that senators from both parties are clearly going to continue to be pushing for.
Right. You report that senators from both parties aren't just frustrated about Americans not being able to get back home. Those senators themselves, it sounds like, have a hard time getting a phone meeting with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to even raise the issue. Do I have that right?
Yeah. So there were a lot of we didn't get specific complaints, perhaps about Pompeo directly from the senators, but, you know, there was frustration about miscommunication or the lack of communication from mid-level officials at the State Department, you know, Senator, or even just a lack of information. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who's a Republican from Alaska, told us that, you know, maybe it's not a lack of response from the State Department, but more a lack of specific information that is being funneled to their office or to her constituents who are stuck in these various countries. So there are senators have clearly identified some communication mishaps in the State Department where there are a lot. at a time when there are a lot of Americans who are just, I'm sure, frustrated and want to get home.
In our last minute and a half or so, Seungmin, you talked about what you're looking for next when it comes to the economic relief and some of the medical supply issues. This story is developing super fast. What else do you have your eye on right now?
I think another thing to have our eye on is, again, the impact on the elections. I mean, you talked earlier about the impact on Wisconsin's primary. A lot of states have clearly pushed back their primary voting calendar to June, whereas I believe the first Tuesday in June is almost becoming the second, coronavirus-induced Super Tuesday of sorts. But we don't know how long this is going to last. You know, I live in Virginia, and we are under a stay-at-home order until June 10th, which is obviously a little longer than what the federal government is suggesting so far. But, the calendar pushes further and further, and obviously it may have, it may already be having an impact on the Democratic convention in Milwaukee. A few weeks later could also have an impact on the Republican National Convention. And, what happens just with the logistics of having an election in November? Hopefully we'll be out of the worst at that point, but I think that is something that obviously election officials at every level of government are closely watching and working on right now, and something that we are following as well.
Seungmin, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Seungmin Kim is a White House reporter at the Washington Post. She joined us for our weekly roundup of some of the top stories in national news, including President Trump's latest responses to the novel coronavirus, including the idea of an infrastructure package as part of the next stimulus bill from Congress, plus a look at the previous big economic recovery bill as that starts to spin out some money and some help for small businesses and others around the country. And for Wisconsin election news, keep following the breaking stories there over at WPR.org/news.